Welcome to Momentum Magnet, a podcast to inspire your growth. I'm Karen Morales, and your host in helping you find ways to make positive changes for your business, health, relationships, and life. We always have a path to a happier ending, so let's get started today. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Momentum Magnet. We are here every week talking to leaders of industry who can help us make changes to positively impact our life and business. Today, we're going to talk about one of my favorite things, and honestly, the one secret that stands in the way of having a marketing campaign that will work. And what is that? Well, if you're a business and you're not worried about consumer expectations, meeting and exceeding them, then you're in for a long and hard struggle, because no marketing campaign alone is going to turn around your sales if that barrier is in the way. So today I invited an expert to come in and talk to us about this very topic. Erica Newell is a client success leader, entrepreneur, and product marketing strategist. Her goal is to help grow your business by delivering value so you can leave your mark with the people that matter most. So today's conversation is going to be just that. What are those top three watchouts that every business needs to keep a pulse on? What is the one thing that's going to stand in your way if you're trying to grow your business and you're not watching the customer experience? So I welcome Erica to the show. Hey, Erica.
Hey, thank you so much for having me on today. I'm excited to be here.
Me too, because this is such an important topic. And honestly, it's often something that people are surprised that I bring up when I go into medium and large size businesses to talk about marketing. So let's ground everybody in what your definition of customer experience is and what you think the most important things are for everybody to know.
Yeah, I think customer success and customer experience are things that we know that are important today in business, but we have some different terms for those. Boiled down to the most basic, it is understanding what your clients' desired outcomes are and helping them achieve it along with your business. So finding a path for both of your success.
Yeah, and it's really important. I think that if you think back in your life as just a consumer, and I always like to start there, think about those moments in time where you had a customer experience that was horrific. So if I think about my background, I worked with a bank once that I had so many series of mishaps that I would never do business with this organization if it was the last bank in the free world. I mean, I would keep my, I keep my money under a mattress before I ever went back and did something like that. And the flip side, something that is so interesting that came up a lot this week with both hospitality and with the medical industry is this idea that as a brand or as a leader, you don't have to do everything right. In essence, it's how you make up for what you did wrong that matters most. I had a few experiences at a luxury hotel in the Northeast that happened, I want to say probably 6 years ago, and they turned around mildly annoying situations to a point of exceeding my expectations that I still tell those stories on a daily basis. Like one example, and this is a beautiful hotel in Maine called Hidden Pond, which I should give them credit for. We were at the pool on Mother's Day. My daughter was probably four. My son was six. And we were sitting on an unseasonably warm day in New England, and it was wonderful, just excited. The weather was great. And we looked at the menu because it wasn't in season, and they didn't have a kid's menu, and they didn't have a lobster roll. And if you're in Maine in May and it's hot, you want a lobster roll, right? They overheard me saying that at the pool, and somehow the manager sent staff to town to buy it from a restaurant and bring back to us so that myself, I could get a lobster roll on Mother's Day and my children could have hot dogs.
Wow.
Right?
What a great experience.
an amazing experience. And so I tell that story now as kind of the beacon of, I could have said, oh, this is an expensive hotel and they have this very like hoity-toity menu that isn't accessible. But they took that experience and over-delivered in such a way that now that's the standard. That's kind of the floor of the standard of what I think a luxury hotel experience should actually feel like. So I think I'm saying that because when you're thinking about consumer experience, thinking about any relationship in your life, it's not only understanding what the other person wants and desires, but understanding how to make up for it when those desires are not met.
Absolutely.
Erica's shaking her head. So let's talk a little bit about how you got into this industry, and then we'll dive into some of the secrets and tricks that every brand should be using when they think about how they engage with their base.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I entered customer experience actually kind of by chance and without meaning to. So early in my career, I worked at Wells Fargo and I had a incredible position. For years and years, my job was I got to coach coaches on their coaching. So I got to help build mentorship programs, employee retention programs, and it really got me down this path of understanding how we kept employees at the time. And I loved it. I loved the coaching. I loved the interviewing. I loved the blend of art and science, understanding people and also the data and what does that point to. And I planned on being at Wells Fargo forever. And then a tech company reached out to me and said, hey, we think you'd be really great for this position. So I actually went and I interviewed just to see what was out there, more just to explore. And I was blown away. I was so excited about the prospect of working with this company, and I ended up taking the role. And that was my first experience actually being called customer success. But I realized that my whole career, I've been working for the same thing. Really at the very beginning, I was asking the questions, how do we keep employees? And so ever since then, I love your passion and enthusiasm for customer experience because I'm very much the same way. It is central to everything that we do in business, whether you're in marketing, whether you're in engineering, whether you are in sales, everything ties or should revolve around the customer. We can talk about some different ways to do that and ways that make sense for your business, right? That doesn't mean that the business has to always take a loss or something like that. But there is a healthy balance. And if we can keep the customer at the center, we're going to have a lot more success long-term. So ever since I joined that tech company, I've been leading customer success teams. I'm so passionate about it that I write about it. I consult on it in my spare time and really enjoy meeting with leaders, speaking at conferences all over about customer success. So it is a huge passion of mine as well.
And to make it really simple for people that maybe have heard a lot of definitions and read different books on the subject, how would you define it in the most simplistic terms?
Yeah. Customer success is a fast evolving industry where you are looking to proactively keep your customers rather than respond to requests or maybe questions like password resets or whatever applies to your business, but you're actually proactively trying to keep those customers.
And that's exactly it. I think when we think about any experience that we have in our lives, nothing feels better than when somebody does something before you even ask for it. And that's the biggest point I think you want to make when we're thinking about consumer experiences. It's about understanding how people make a purchase decision and making sure you show up with the right information at right before the right time. So it's like you're reading their mind and meeting their desires. It's also understanding what are those pain points that will permanently turn them off. And yeah. I think if you use, you know, the analogy of people in our lives, there's probably something in your personal life that triggers you. And people that have that trait, you don't have in your inner circle. It's the same with brands, whether that is being clear or precise. I know for me, one of my filters for brands is do not waste my time. If I have to wait an exorbitant amount of time or be transferred to 5 or 6 customer service reps to handle a rather simple thing like a password change that happened to me yesterday, I'm done. That's a deal breaker for me when it comes to my professional relationship. So I think it's understanding those deal breakers for your consumers and trying to avoid them at all costs.
I totally agree. Some things that we sometimes forget about, even in customer success, even in this industry, is sometimes we hyperfixate on, I mean, this role is to mitigate churn when it comes down to it. So how do we keep those customers? But I love that you mentioned the other side of that. I think with your experience with the hotel, this really keys into that, where you've identified what your needs are, what your desired outcome is. Don't waste my time. And we need to be asking both, why are we losing customers? But we also need to be thinking ahead. How are we keeping customers, and who are the right customers? And that's why building a team in customer success, and even if they don't have a customer success team, where you can start with your organization, no matter your size or where you're at, is start with the beginning of the customer cycle, the customer journey. So why are they looking for your product? What questions are they asking? What are they actually going through? Often we'll use terminology internally that a customer would never use. And you need to start getting in that mindset of the customer. What do they need? And so customer success and retention is actually a whole organization initiative. And so there are a lot of, especially software as a service companies, that are keying into this and starting to invest in customer success teams. But any organization can apply elements from customer success to help grow their business.
Yeah, and it is so resonant in technology, because a lot of times there would be an engineering team who could build a new feature or functionality. And just because you can build it does not mean that you should. Because in some moments in time, some of the things that are, you know, created and the cost that they add to the baseline product don't end up being something that a consumer is willing to spend on.
Yeah. And quite frankly, oh man, I have so many examples of where this has happened. Sometimes as businesses, we can fall on both sides. We can hear maybe customer complaints and ignore those. Or we could say, oh, this customer is complaining about this and they're a big customer. Well, first, we got to take like 3 steps back. Understand where your business is going. What's your business vision? And what are we doing to get there? How fast are we getting there? Do we need to retain your customer base? Or do we have the luxury of saying, hey, we are only building towards this new product. You know, we don't have to listen to any customer feedback. So that's kind of step one, is understanding where you're going. But to your point about building things, is customers may be squeaky. They may be loud about feature requests or things that they need. And this actually triggers a few thoughts. First and foremost, the noisiest customers may threaten that they're going to cancel. They may threaten that they don't like your service, and unless you develop this feature, they're going to leave. But data actually suggests counter to that. If they are loud about their feedback, it's great. We can learn from it. We can take it in. We can understand how does this affect our vision, our other customers that are maybe part of that ideal customer profile. But also, if they are loud enough to be complaining, they're actually invested to some extent in your product. And so product teams can certainly take that, you know, take that feedback. And I think that's important to understand, what's the why behind this, or why do they want this specific feature? But even taking a step farther back and understanding, okay, does this complaint or suggestion align with where we want to go long-term and our ideal customer profile and base? And if so, maybe that does change our product direction. But if not, maybe we just need to communicate a little bit differently with those customers. The other thing that I think a lot about is when you have loud customers, you know, they are, again, they're invested to some extent, and kind of keep in mind that there are certain customers that maybe they are your top customer and you can't ignore their requests, right? You may have to make some different exceptions. But I think clear communication and expected outcomes and making sure they understand your product cycle or whatever the complaint looks like can really help in building trust long term. So even if you have to say no, it can be a moment where you build with that customer. And I've had customers have more respect for our organizations after we've pushed back on them.
think that's a really good point, because not all feedback is good feedback. And we know that in our lives. And I think there is something really to be said. I loved how you positioned that, that it's sometimes the quiet, complacent consumers that slip out your back door gives you a bigger problem in your churn. And finding out what those silent deflectors are will really give you the best insights. I mean, I'm thinking about my own life and some of these experiences that I've had that made me leave. And I did most of them silently. I mean, the customer service rep who had that last sort of nail in the coffin moment with me certainly understood that I was going to be out the door. But I mean, I didn't spend a lot of my precious time complaining. It was just like, I'm going to take my money elsewhere. And I think a lot of people do that. And a lot of B2B companies do that.
Definitely. And I think that we can sometimes we'll ask right before the renewal, are you going to renew? And then in like the month before there's a subscription renewal or something like that, we are scrounging. We're trying to pull our product teams in. We're trying to get everybody aligned so we can like keep this customer. Often, if you are like a month or two from renewal, that is far too late. And so to your point, Karen, I think we need to be asking all along, you know, what does your happiness look like? But even more than that, what does your loyalty look like? Those are different measures, different things. And someone may leave and be happy. They may leave because they're bored. But if we're not asking that loyalty question, if we're not identifying our advocates, then we may be missing out on a lot of growth revenue, but also those quiet customers that could disappear without warning.
One of the best questions that I implemented, and this is a great easy solve that most businesses can do today, especially if you're in a B2B relationship. I started off asking this question anytime I signed a contract for marketing services. And I asked, what makes our relationship successful? And what is the thing that will deem this a failure? And it has been so interesting to me to get that feedback, because it's often things that I would not predict. I've had a client say that if I move our meeting time, they will think the relationship is a failure.
Wow. But that
I never would have guessed that. And I don't try to move meeting times, but let me say, like, that one was in red, and my assistant knew, like, these meetings come hell or high water, do not move. Like, I'd have to be bleeding out for that to move. I've had other people say that they don't like voicemail. They don't enjoy texting. If we don't hit every deadline that was outlined in the contract, they will feel like it is not a success. So any of those little things that you can pull out early are so helpful, because often it is the smallest things that take a business down. Most people think, oh, it's my branding, or I wasn't able to get my beautiful social media campaign executed. No, it's often a clerical error or a big mess up with a large consumer, or, you know, the PO that got processed incorrectly, that can take a company down.
Yes, absolutely. I always think of a personal example when I hear stories like this, where I, even with a friend, one time a friend made me dinner and I went to their house. I did their dishes afterwards, you know, thinking I'm doing great. And I had left the sponge in the sink, and I could tell they had this like annoyance and they were angry. And there was like pause. And then finally they expressed like, you know, never leave the sponge in the sink, you know, make sure it's like tilted up so it can dry appropriately. Up until that point in my life, I had never even thought about where I left the sponge after I washed the dishes, right? No. But they had this expectation. And now, I'll tell you what, even now, I make sure to not leave the sponge in the sink. And so it's funny to me that sometimes you have those clients where maybe their boundary is wasting my time, like you were talking about earlier with calling in somewhere. It could be moving a meeting. It could also be they may have expectations throughout the sales process or because of other vendors with like cadence or what communication looks like or what we do for them. And I think asking those questions early on in the relationship is, man, I would work with you any day of the week, because a lot of the time those get handed over maybe to a success team or they just start working with your organization. And without asking those questions early on, we can't align those expectations very well. We can't stop them and make sure that, you know, we're both on the same page. But also, you may have just moved a meeting because you had something else come up and not realized how big of a deal that was. So I love that you're asking those questions early on, and note that those expectations could change. It's another thing that's really important to ask questions over a period of time, because 6 months in, they may say, hey, you know, this Monday meeting at 8 a.m. is really killing me. And you're like, well, I didn't move it because you asked me not to. But that
I mean, the beautiful part of what you're saying, and I love the sponge story, because that and again, I'm one of these dishwashers. Like, I don't like washing dishes. I have no opinion on how you load my dishwasher. I would never think my sponge is definitely in my sink right now, not drying. I would never think of that. But it's usually the challenge we have with other humans is they're not meeting our unsaid expectations, period. And when you're thinking about applying this to your business, you can see how you need to be really clear about what the rules are, engagement in negotiating the contract or getting the project to fruition. It's the same in your personal life. In any type of interpersonal relationship, asking those questions about, I see that you're disappointed, how have I upset you? Or what have I not lived up to? And uncovering those triggers is so important in understanding someone else.
Oh, man. Yeah. And if you think about it, I mean, it is, I think the last study that I read is on average for SaaS companies, it is 9 times more expensive to get a new customer than it is to retain an existing customer. I'm sure this varies business to business, industry to industry. But if you think about that, if it's just because you left the sponge in the sink, how silly does that feel? Like, we should not be losing customers because of that. So asking those questions, both early on, but throughout the relationship, not just when it's time for renewal, is paramount. I love that you're doing that on the marketing team.
It is. It has been very important. And I have worked, when I worked in corporate America and ran accounts for, you know, global brands, we did a referral questionnaire with our clients once a quarter, where the clients would have to rate us on a scale of 1 to 10, that you don't get, by the time they're filling out a negative review, to your point, you're almost too late. So it's also getting comfortable with the discomfort of asking the questions earlier on. And I think you can channel this idea of, you know, I wash someone's dishes after dinner and they look annoyed. I took the next step to say, what's bothering you? Simply because you wanted to fix it and you weren't going to get defensive that your way doesn't involve, you know, drying out the sponge. It didn't matter at that point. The point was, it was somebody else's home and that's how they prefer to have it done. So you might as well just do it, because it doesn't matter. And you adopted a new sponge technique in the meantime, right?
It's true. And the funny thing is, I learned from that situation. Right now, I'm a diehard. You put the sponge on the side of the sink or let it dry out. It's so funny, because in that moment, they could have never expected I'd be talking about this on a podcast this morning, right? But that is so key. And I think that no matter what part of a business you're in, if you're in product engineering, if you are in BI, if you are in like any part of the business, if you ever have customer interaction, asking those uncomfortable questions is actually what gives you a trusted client relationship. And I alluded to this earlier, but sometimes we'll do things like customer satisfaction surveys, and that's great. It's good to get a baseline for how satisfied customers are. But also, that is satisfaction. And depending on the questions that you're asking, that may not point to loyalty. And so identifying those things and continuing to identify those along the way, really, there's no other way to do it besides just asking those questions.
So let's stop there. And I tend to do this a lot, because I feel like it's easier sometimes for people to grasp the human side of business context than to put it into a brand. So I'm going to give the human side, and you give a brand example. So when you say satisfaction doesn't tie to loyalty. I could say something like, in a personal relationship, I assume honesty is one of my core values. But when I really push and shove, what gets me more excited is passion. So even if you show up with honesty and somebody else gives me passion, I may go for that, even though you've met your goal, right? And it's the same with brands. So give us a good example of that differentiation between satisfaction and loyalty from a company perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. I once worked with a company who our product was to help employees become kind of like a social media marketing platform. So basically to help employees share content about the company, whatever that looks like, whatever that company is. And it was really interesting. We had a bunch of customers, and one of my CSMs brought to me this customer who said that they were canceling. And, you know, every month we have a call with this customer. They seem to be happy. They seem to be okay. They give us high ranks on customer satisfaction scores. They're willing to even be a reference. They're not proactive about anything, but for all intents and purposes, we think they are fine. But in this example, we asked them about 6 months before the renewal, point blank, you know, if your renewal was tomorrow, would you renew? And the customer said no. And they said that they were actually exploring another product and they had not been looking for another product. This other product, like your competition will always be looking for new prospects, right? And so even your customers today, they could be happy. They could like what they're doing. They may not know everything as you develop your product about what you can do. And they may see something flashy and new and think, oh, all these extra features, without maybe realizing that they'd be missing out on some. There's trade-offs. And so we see that actually, I think I read a statistic that was like every 7 years, people switch out of boredom, subscriptions, whatever that is, if they don't have, tying into your key questions, their desired outcomes, and they're not seeing like a specific return on their investment of time or monetarily or whatever that is. So we actually lost this customer. This prompted my surprise client breakup article that I wrote. And we lost a customer, which is so embarrassing now, not because we did anything wrong, not because they were unhappy, but just because the competition came in and said, hey, we can do these flashy things. Ultimately, we could have done those things as well. They just hadn't asked us the question.
And that's the moment in time, right? It's baseline expectations plus surprise and delight. And it's, they're expecting you to not only meet their expectations, but to romance them a little, to woo them. I mean, that's really the key. I mean, I've stayed at a lot of beautiful hotels around the world and I've had a lot of, you know, five-star experiences, but that experience in one weekend I had at this beautiful boutique hotel in Maine still sets the bar for over delivering beyond my wildest expectations. I would never be mad that they didn't get me food that wasn't on the menu. I mean, that's neither here nor there, but I am still awestruck that they did.
Yes. And another thing to think about in regards to business, the business side of that, is there's two kind of elements to this, and this is also oversimplified, but we can kind of think of that in two different buckets. A lot of companies, you'll have a key contact, maybe someone who runs a program or a main admin, and they're your person that you're contacting all the time, make sure that they're good to go. So they could communicate, hey, to get ROI, we need X, X, and X outcomes so I can deliver those to my executive team, or I need this functionality, and that's why we'll buy. But there's also a personal side to this as well. Mm-hmm. And as funny as this sounds, if you can bolster your admins, the people who work with your product, it is advantageous to all of you. So something I started adopting in a previous company that worked really, really well is trying to get your admins promoted, right? Trying to get your admins moved into or at least spotlighted in those senior level positions or at least by the decision makers. So this helps benefit their career, helps spotlight the work that they're doing, but it also keys into, hey, you made such a great choice in buying this product. And so it's from a place of sincerity, But then it starts again establishing that relationship, not only from that like business logical standpoint, but if someone feels like I'm advocating for their career and helping spotlight them and reaching out to their boss and saying, hey, this person is really nailing it when it comes to X, X, and X. They've saved your company this much money this year. That can, on a personal level, help your admin and their leaders feel a lot of confidence in your company as well.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And I've actually heard that strategy. I'm trying to remember at what conference I heard about that, but it was some very famous speaker speaking about how he gets approached very often on flights and how his willingness to take the card and network is in direct correlation with the people that actually acknowledge his wife, who's usually right next to him. So he said, I actually pay a lot of attention on who just speaks to me because they want something, or who has the openness to interact with the two of us, or the two of us and our children in that moment. And to me, that always feels more genuine and I'm more willing to work with them. I think that's the same when you're trying to schedule enterprise software. I talk a lot when I'm training big companies on how to sell software or high ticket items in the B2B space. You have to know who influences the decision maker. And a lot of times that's the admin. So if the admin is scheduling RFP meetings for three different vendors, and you're the one that makes Sally feel good, or John, whomever, you know, or Juan, or whoever the admin is, right, makes them feel good and treats them with respect and offers to help, they're probably going to put in a good word about your contract because they feel like the service is 360. Definitely seem awry simply because people weren't in the way. You know, they just got a deal signed because they weren't nice to the entire staff. And that definitely matters. Is it back? I'm going to take a quick pause because we can cut it back together. Is the audio back?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think you're good.
Okay. Okay, great. Doug, that was the piece we're going to cut. Okay, good. So if you were to leave everybody with the three rules that they should be applying with the lens of customer success, what would those be?
So the first one would definitely be to put the customer at the center. Understand your customer journey, and that keys into every part of your business. And so client journey should have alignment across your whole organization. So that's where you start. That's number one. Then when you're building a team, if you're building a customer success team, or if you're even just trying to influence your business to help retain your customers, think about the process, the current procedures and operating things that you have in place, technology, have the right technology, people, and process in place to help support that. And you'll find that sometimes there are things that we break, or maybe a process that's not clear or clean, that if we can just refine that, it actually in turn influences customer happiness, loyalty, retention, and mitigates churn. And then finally, when it comes to contacting your customers, we talked a little bit today about relationships. And I think building those key relationships from a personal perspective and a professional perspective is really, really important to help bolster that relationship, not just from the business side. And I would say do that from bottom up and top down. So understand who the decision makers are, try and get across an organization and understand multiple people. But exactly to your point, Karen, where it seems a lot more sincere if we have people from bottom, quote unquote, up, maybe just people that are working in your product day to day. If they're loyal in your product, then in turn, both sides will be working together for your renewal.
That's beautiful. And I'm going to leave us with a momentum tip for marketing, which really is your outward facing marketing campaigns are only as effective as your consumer experience. Because if you boil down to marketing into words, that's only half as believable as action. People are going to believe their experience with you way more than they're going to believe a social media post, TV ad, or a radio spot. So when you're thinking about your business, and if you're stuck and not meeting your sales goals, you have to look at your outward facing marketing campaigns as the leads you bring in and your consumer success or experience as the ones that you keep and sell within your business. So it is one without the other, a connectic set of circles that need to be connected for you to be successful, and not enough businesses look at that. So this was really helpful. If someone has a brand or a business and they're struggling with an aspect of product development or consumer experience, employee satisfaction, how could they reach out to you, Erica?
I think best would just be my LinkedIn. So I am Erica J. Newell, N-E-W-E-L-L.
Perfect. So please find Erica Newell at Erica J. Newell on LinkedIn. And we thank you so much for your time. It's such an important topic and one that more businesses should be making a cornerstone of their business strategy. So thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to Momentum Magnet. We're here every Friday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time to share inspiring comeback stories. We want to hear your reviews and love getting your subscriptions on iTunes and Spotify. For show notes and past episodes, visit MomentumMagnet.com. I'm Karen Morales, keynote speaker, writer, and founder and CEO of Marketing Magnet, a fast-growing marketing agency for purpose-driven companies. Whether you are a business needing an agency, or if you are looking for weekly tips to get ahead, sign up at marketing-magnet.com to receive our weekly inspiration on getting more in your life and business.